KBOO. And it really shows to donors as well, for future donors, that we can pull together as a community to show support for this community radio station. KBOO.FM or 1-877-500-526. That's it for Stage and Studio. I'm Dima Roberts. Thanks to Tave Fashe Drake for engineering. And you can hear the show later today at kboo.fm/stageandstudio or stageandstudio.org. Thanks so much for joining us, and thank you for your support. 1-877-500-5266.
Stage and Studio is just another example of why you need to support your community radio station, KBOO.FM. And I want to take this quick opportunity to thank two folks who stopped by in person to make their donations. Terrence renewed his from Southeast, and Suzanne also renewed her donation. So take this opportunity, give us a call, 877-500-5266, or KBOO.FM on the web, and click donate.
Oh, Ray, I wanted to mention too, after D-May's show, she talked with Portland Center Stage, and we do have a pair of tickets if you become a member today for a minimum contribution of $90 to any Portland Center Stage show. And as D-May said, they're always great tickets. And she mentioned a few of the shows today, some of their Christmas shows, the winter shows. And also, for a minimum contribution of $70, we have tickets to Pericles Wet at Artist Repertory Theater. And again, great seats. Perfect time to become a member. Give us a call, 877-500-5266, or online at kboo.fm. And one more thing I'd like to mention is the matching period. Ray, if you become a member today or increase your sustaining membership, say you're giving $10 a month, you increase that to $5 a month, that will be matched dollar for dollar by a group of very generous donors to KBOO, 877-500-5266, online at kboo.fm. What a wonderful day to celebrate Giving Tuesday.
KBOO would like to give special thanks to our local community partners who have donated food for our volunteers today. Breakfast was provided by Waffle Window, located 3610 Southeast Hawthorne Boulevard in Portland, and serving unique Portland-style Liege waffles with four locations total. Find out more at wafflewindow.com. Lunch was provided by Tamale Boy Restaurant, Truck, and Catering with three locations in Portland. Go to tamaleboy.com for more info. And dinner was provided by Dubs St. John's, located 9520 North Lombard Street in Portland, and serving burgers, sandwiches, and soul food from a counter inside the Ranger Tavern. For more information on how you can support KBOO, call 877-500-5266 right now.
KBOO's Daily Prize Drawing Rules. Everyone who donates will be entered into the Daily Prize Drawing. No purchase necessary to be entered. Making a purchase or contribution will not improve an individual's chance for winning. The Daily Prize Drawing is subject to all applicable federal, state, and local laws and regulations, void where prohibited, or restricted by law or regulations. To enter, call 877-500-5266 between the hours of 6 a.m. and 10 p.m. and provide your name, complete address with zip code, date of birth, and day/evening phone numbers with area code. Only one entry per person per household will be accepted each day. Winner will be determined in a random drawing following the announcement of that day's prize after 10 p.m. Winner may be notified by telephone following the drawing. For a copy of official prize drawing rules and restrictions, and for the name of the winner, go to kboo.fm/holiday prize. And thank you.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, and up next is Art Focus.
Hi there. My name is Eric Bartels, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO FM 90.7 Community Radio. Last week, an exhibition called Contact Zones, New works by the Portland artist Samuel Eisen Myers, opened at Paragon Gallery on North Killingsworth Street. The organizing inquiry of the main part of the exhibit is the question, how can we recreate America? Our guest today, Samuel Eisen Myers. Samuel, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Eric. It's good to be here.
There are two series of works that you've done in the current exhibit. One is inspired by some time that you spent in an artist community in Cuba.
Yes.
Can you tell us about that?
Yes, I would love to. So it was in Matanzas, Cuba, which is about an hour and 30 minutes east of Havana. And it was kind of an accident, but I went down to Cuba initially with this intention and what I thought wasn't an expectation, but I wanted to go down there and learn more about their culture and about this kind of voice inside myself that had been calling me to the island for a really long time. And I wound up in Matanzas, long story short, at this really amazing kind of decaying building that was housing these really, like, just quite extraordinary painters and sculptors and humans.
What was your connection to Cuba? Are you of Cuban descent? Was there something that you learned or saw at some point in your life that made it a goal for you?
Really, what it was the rhythm of the music from that area really got me. And for like a decade, I had been listening to a lot of Cuban music in the States and just very inspired by it. And the correlation there, something that relates to the art and the artistic process, really, really drew me there.
We haven't mentioned you are, in addition to being a painter, mm-hmm. a singer, songwriter, performer. Tell us a little bit about the evolution of the two things. Were you a musician before you were a fine artist, or how did those two things come about, and in what order?
Those both came about kind of equally at the same time when I was little. Back when I was 6-7 years old, the schools had a lot of art and music classes available.
You attended public schools in Portland?
Yeah, I went to Irvington Elementary School, and a lot of the time spent there was painting and music, and it really was my outlet at that time. And we had orchestra and piano and after-school art classes and music classes scattered throughout the day, and I really attribute being exposed to that, to the ability to kind of nurture that as time moved forward.
Was there art around you otherwise? Were your parents artists?
Not so much. They were very much supporters of the arts. So there was always music. There was always exposure to it. And it was very much supported, which really enabled it to happen. Because the expansive record collections, paintings on the walls, talk about art. It was always there, and in an extended family, it's always been a part of the extended family as well.
It's pretty well known that the arts are well supported in Cuba. That during the Castro years, resources were devoted to mm-hmm. artists and art was promoted in that country. Did that have anything to do with your wanting to be there, to go there and be a part of that?
Yeah, I was really inspired, actually quite interested in the history, and seeing how art was supported and is supported now, but also the fact that there are still, for them to get supplies was a whole different kind of operation that was really strategically super, super complicated. And seeing that and seeing how, you know, the art stores didn't have hours and they were typically closed. So if you wanted to wait for a canvas or paintbrushes, it could be a month before you had to get your supplies. And that was a year and a half ago.
Right.
But the ways that the arts were supported and the ways that this collective of artists were able to work every day and show up every day in their community and be able to create was really inspiring.
In the current exhibit at Paragon Gallery, what will we see that kind of best reflects or represents what you experienced in Cuba?
So the reflection and the kind of recreation of the space and the time and the energy and almost the creative muse that I was able to access down there and almost was given from the generosity of just being able to be there and create with them, that is what I tried to recreate in the specific room in the gallery. So there's some sound installation, and a lot of the works were based on studies that I did while I was down working with the artist collective in Matanzas. And it was an attempt to kind of like ask myself about art as appropriation and the give and take when you go somewhere, when you hop on a plane and you go to a different culture, and what it means to experience that culture and what it means to come back with that energy. And a big part of that trip for me was actually writing an article for a local publication in Portland called Oregon Arts Watch.
Mm-hmm.
But I spent a good year kind of recycling and going through my thoughts and thinking about that trip and the interviews. Each day when I was down there working with the artist collective, I'd sit with one of the artists and interview them, and I'd watch their processes, and they'd tell me a lot about, you know, everything that they were doing. So I felt it was, before I could start painting, I had to get out everything that they showed me and about their work and about their process, because these are extremely talented individuals. So just getting that out there in the exchange and allowing people to see it, there was already some minor waves of people going that had heard about the article. Just a few people from Portland,
mm-hmm.
people that had seen it on the web, because there's not a lot of text about the gallery itself down there and the workshop itself available online, except from like TripAdvisor. But now they're starting to get a lot more going in terms of online presence.
The main part of the exhibit, Contact Zones, is more about the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And in the text of the promotional materials at Paragon, there's mention of social reality, cognition, dialogue around mm-hmm. political, social, cultural forms of oppression.
Mm-hmm.
Are these two things unrelated? Or to what extent was the main part of the exhibit driven by your experience in Cuba? Was it already sort of freestanding? Was it sort of influenced later by your trip to Cuba? Talk maybe a little bit about the main exhibit.
Okay, so one of the biggest inspirations for starting the body of work when I got back from the trip to Cuba was this idea of being disciplined and seeing how they showed up every day and spent 6 to 7 days a week working full time towards their art and their creativity. And that's something that I think that I had seen but not necessarily been exposed to here. I know it exists here and there's so many people doing that, but for some reason I found it there, and that was a really big inspiration to come back and create this larger body of work.
The works in the main portion of the exhibit are powerful,
mm-hmm.
large canvases, dark, not just figuratively, but literally. In several of them, if not all of them, there are figures, individuals who are in darkness, often in postures of, I don't know if anguish is too strong a word. There's struggle,
mm-hmm.
certainly. And obviously you were able to sustain that emotion, that feeling, through the creation of the series of paintings.
Mm.
What can you sort of tell us about that?
Well, my deep love for both music and art, and my kind of desire also to be really figuring out how to get more active just in the community here in Portland and in general with trying to make positive change in our world, in our society. I was like, how can I use this medium of painting or use this medium of music to kind of channel and also use as a reflective tool to kind of better understand a lot of the really wild craziness that exists in the world? Because it's such a powerful place and it's hard to deny what's here. So I felt really called to try and use the medium as something that could help both myself understand all this really intense turmoil that's going on and this kind of inner dialogue of how do I become more active and how do I make a difference and how do I channel all this really, really dark and negative energy that's coming from our society right now.
You said a full year,
yeah.
or thereabouts, creating the
yeah.
series of paintings in the main part of the exhibit.
Mm-hmm.
At the end, were you able to sort of step back and see how well you had done in that regard?
Honestly, it was a really, really introverted time period in a way. But the space I was creating in, there was a lot of different young collectives in that space. So it really informed the process. But I was really able to devote almost 100% of my time to the process for a year, just kind of painting and working through things and reading and listening to different interviews and learning about the different kind of like hegemonic systems that I take part in and that we, you know, that I'm involved with, to try to better understand them and be like, well, why does this exist and where did it come from? And what is the history of this issue? So I could come out the other end and better figure out a way to become involved.
You said that this is sort of the most high-profile endeavor you've sort of had as a fine artist. More people are going to see your work as a painter through this exhibit than have in the past. Is that right?
Yeah. Yeah, this is definitely a beginning stride for me as a painter.
What has come back so far? The show opened last week. Mm-hmm. There are some events coming up right. related to the show, and I'll have you sort of fill us in a little bit on that. But either in the process or in the time since the show went up, what's come back? What have you heard?
Well, it's been a few days, and the opening was wonderful. A lot of people came through, and I was very grateful for that. I think the biggest thing now was figuring out how to talk more about it. Talk with other people about it and hear what other
people
are.
Which is what you're doing right now.
Yeah, so this is a really wonderful initial step in that direction to start dialoguing a bit more. And I'm really, really looking forward to dialoguing with more people about different oppression that they see that exists. And
I'm Ray, and I'm here with Ken, and we want to welcome you to the first day of KBOO's Holiday Membership Drive. Here on Giving Tuesday, we're asking you to think about making KBOO one of your donation locations. That is, right now we're listening to
Art Focus.
Art Focus, and the interview is with Samuel Eisen Myers and his Paragon Gallery show, Contact Zones. The kind of information that you're going to regularly get here at KBOO. So please take this opportunity to show your support for the station by giving us a call at 877-500-5266 or by going online to kboo.fm and clicking on the donate button.
And what interesting morning of public affairs and cultural affairs. We started, I think, with North Korea, with alternative radio. We went to Honduras, so international news. And now we're back in Portland with the cultural scene, Dime Roberts Stage and Studio, Portland Center Stage Productions, or their winter Christmas shows. And now Art Focus, a visual artist, Samuel Eisen Myers, as Ray mentioned. That's the kind of information you get on KBOO. And to keep that information going, to show your support, it's time to become a member if you're not already a member, or renew your membership at 877-500-5266. It's our holiday membership drive. It starts today, Ray, on Giving Tuesday, very appropriate, and will go through December 4th.
Ken, our goal this hour is $360, and you can help us reach that goal by becoming a member now, and at the same time, you would be entered to win a prize. And today's prize, today's drawing is for four pairs of VIP tickets at Portland Center Stage at the Armory. And you can enter into that contest by going to 877-500-5266 and making your donation. And we're looking forward to hearing both renewals and from new folks. You're out there. We know that there are folks that haven't had an opportunity to make that donation, to become a member. This is your chance. Take this opportunity on Giving Tuesday and give us a call, 877-500-5266.
And even more, there's even more here, and that's this is a matching period. We have a group of very generous KBOO donors. They got together, and they're ready to match up to $3,000 in new and increased donations. In other words, if you become a new member today, say for $10 a month, that actually becomes $20 a month to KBOO. If you're already a member, say you're giving $10 a month and you upped at the $5 a month, 15 in other words, or another $10 to $20 a month, that increase will also be matched by these generous donors. So your money goes even farther today for KBOO. 877-500-5266. We've been around since 1968. Next year, Ray, 50th anniversary.
Next year, almost as old as me, Ken.
You don't look a day over 49.
Well, thank you for that. Let me take this opportunity to thank Aaron from Southeast Portland, who gave online at KBOO.FM. And Aaron said in his note, thank you for all the great shows and music. And Aaron, we thank you for becoming a member, and urge everybody else to take this opportunity to either become a member or renew your membership by calling 877-500-5266 or by going online and clicking kboo.fm and hitting the donate button.
And I know I've been harping on this, Ray, but it just really blew me away. We had a contribution earlier this morning from Francine in Aix-en-Provence, France, the south of France, the birthplace of Paul Cézanne, the great Impressionist painter. If Francine in France can give to KBOO, you in Portland, the listeners here in Portland and in Oregon, can give to KBOO. 877-500-5266 or online at kboo.fm. Not only that, but it gets matched today dollar for dollar. If you become a new member, you get entered into this drawing to win a pair of tickets, VIP tickets, to Portland Center Stage, any production of your choice. So now's the time. 877-500-5266 or online, kboo.fm.
Maybe. So if you want to pick up that phone and call 877-500-5266, you will be entered into that drawing. But in addition, we also have a hoodie. So if you want to call and make a big contribution, it's $25 a month or $300 as a one-year donation, then you could get this very wonderful, warm, snuggly thank you hoodie. So consider that, and you can also go online and donate at you can call us 877-500-5266 or go online to kboo.fm and click on that donate button. KBOO keeps you informed and you can get involved. We offer classes, we have wonderful volunteer opportunities with training, and in addition to that, if you'd like to make a contribution and make that a double contribution today, pick up that phone and call us at 877-500-5266. My name is Tave Fache Drake. We're going to be getting back to Eric Bartels with his interview with oil painter, songwriter, and performer Samuel Eisen Myers and his Paragon Gallery show, Contact Zones, just up in just 1 second.
How to kind of recreate what is happening right now in our maybe even like just in our local community. So those are ideas for the space that I'm hoping to activate it. As a space to talk.
Did you get a feeling at the opening or since that the potential is there for that? Are you starting to hear people eager to sort of start that conversation or add to that conversation just in the short time since the exhibit opened?
Yeah, and it's been really both affirming because a lot of my kind of closer community was there and just seeing how that's a really good place to start because it can be really uncomfortable. I mean, that was a hard thing was like, I was a little conflicted because I was like, there's a lot of, I guess you could say controversial for some reason, subject matter in some of the paintings. And I think the biggest thing is just figuring out how to know that that's okay, to know that it's going to be really important moving forward, that if you have the energy and the desire to start really talking about what's happening right now. And I know a lot of people are.
Well, and I think everyone or many people understand that it's important to have that conversation, that we may not sort of get to the end of it, but the obvious first step is to get it going, to get people talking about the things that we're confused about or things that we're not doing well. That conversation is bound to be difficult at times, challenging at times. And we talked a little bit off air about your sort of place in the conversation as an artist. We're talking about issues which primarily have come to the forefront in recent years in the shape of the Black Lives Matter movement and the response to these repeated sort of acts of violence against people of color by law enforcement. And then, of course, there's our most recent presidential election, which a lot of people believe may have been fueled in part by racist ideas. You're a white guy. Paragon Gallery is affiliated with Portland Community College. It's on North Killingsworth Street. It's in a kind of traditionally African-American neighborhood. You're participating in a conversation that certainly isn't limited to communities of color, but conversations around social justice and racial equity can be complicated and challenging. It would be easy for someone who sees your work in this exhibit to assume that you're African American or that you're not a white guy, which you are. Does that ever enter your thinking? Do you ever question your legitimacy as someone who wants to inspire or participate in this conversation?
Yeah, so the first thing I think is looking at white and white guy. And, you know, I hope 10 years from now when you look at that Scantron test, which hopefully won't be around too, but you fill in that bubble that says Caucasian or white. And I think that, you know, it's important to look like at your roots and your lineage and your history and recognize that, you know, what is white. And you know, even from my own history, looking at where different parts of my family came from. And so I guess I could be compartmentalized into white now. And I think the biggest thing is to look at, you know, what is your role in the conversation? What is my role? And I think it's really important for white people to be speaking up and to be speaking out and to be looking in and looking in at what, like, what that looks like and what that even means.
Maybe we've been a little careless about our thinking about who gets to participate in the conversation. I mean, social justice and issues of oppression and fairness affect everyone. And and I don't certainly mean to minimize the experience of African Americans or people of color in this country or anybody, any other sort of traditionally oppressed group. Those are obviously legitimate experiences. But I wonder if as the through the run of the show you won't find that there are people surprised to know your background. You know, your voice is powerful.
Yeah.
And as it should be.
So when I was creating those pieces, I wasn't thinking about skin color, and it was my goal to make them kind of would the right word be race neutral, just kind of not really being able to identify what is this race, what is this person. And I actually got some feedback being like, people were saying like, oh, I can't really tell, is that, you know, what race is this person in this painting? And that was almost kind of a subconscious goal, because when I was mixing color tones and color palettes, I wasn't thinking about what skin color this person was going to be. I was like, oh my gosh, this burnt sienna with a little bit of cadmium red and Naples yellow and some ultramarine blue looks really beautiful together. So it was never like, oh, I'm going to paint this a certain way in order to kind of fall into a certain context of race.
Right.
That was never a thought. And it actually, you know, I was painting these pieces in a communal space that was, I was right in the front, and there was often a lot of people coming through. And there was some really awesome young collectives in the space, Deep Underground and YGB were two. They were often in the space and good friends of mine. And like, that was never a conversation. They would never look at me and be like, why are you painting these figures like this? Or it was never really in the forefront of my mind. And now I'm hoping maybe to talk about that more and what that looks like and, you know, what is the role in the conversation. But personally, like, within the how do we recreate America context, it's looking at, like, having the conversation with people from all backgrounds about, like, you know, what does oppression look like in their lives, and dialoguing about that together to figure out a way to just kind of move forward.
Absolutely. Well, and I'm wondering the experience of having spent time in Cuba, which is a profoundly multicultural place, where in some ways, you know, I wouldn't call it post-racial, but you have this sort of blending of cultures that's been a fact of Cuban society for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
It makes sense that you might have brought some of that feeling back, that that oppression certainly has many forms and can victimize just about anyone.
Yeah, and I also think that, you know, I don't know enough about to get into it, about that kind of oppression that exists, but I know that there, you know, is a lot of racism in Cuba, and historically there has been and there still is. Yeah, I don't quite feel comfortable going into that because I don't have the most knowledge about it. But I was listening to this really interesting interview and speech recently from this historic figure named Abraham Heschel, Rabbi Heschel. I grew up Jewish, but don't really affiliate with, I'm more of a spiritual person now, and, you know, it's a heritage thing, and definitely identify with a lot of the religion, and I think a lot of religions are beautiful and look forward to learning more about many religions. But one thing he said was, some are responsible and all are guilty. And I know it's not good to think about guilt in that light, and we're taught not to be guilty. But I think that that idea that there's some people in society that are responsible for the oppression that exists, and we're all operating within that. So essentially, we all have a role to play in making sure that it doesn't exist in the future. There's some sort of responsibility that exists within a few, but all of us kind of have this role in the bigger picture. You know, whether you look at Portland and you look at the housing or the homelessness issue, or you look at, you know, who Portland is catering to as it grows, you know, we're all responsible in that to figure out how to make it work, you know? And I think that that kind of is what has inspired this work too, is like reflecting on that through the creative process. And then now that that part's over, being like, okay, now what the heck do I do? How do I get active in the community here and connect with other people, students at PCC, community members, whomever it might be, to start dialoguing about what that action looks like?
Well said. I sometimes feel that the what is missing is, what's the next step? That, that what are we aspiring to? Where do we go next? And